HBO's Game of Thrones is finally back. Sansa and Daenerys square up. Samwell Tarly gets devastating news. And Jon takes his first dragon ride. Lots to get caught up on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on WAER is supported by SRC Incorporated, a not-for-profit defense contractor working to create an exceptional employee experience through respect, teamwork, and the freedom to innovate. Learn more at srcinc.com/careers.
Winter is finally here. The television phenomenon that is A Game of Thrones is back for its final run, and it was very much worth the wait. Welcome to WAER's Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee. I've invited several superfans to join me after each episode, well, one fan per episode, to break things down and make sense of the greatest game on television. And warning to you all, there will be spoilers. It's a spoiler show, pretty much. Joining me for the aptly titled Winterfell Season 8 first episode, I welcome to the show Dan Cohen, anchor and reporter for WREX-TV in Rockford, Illinois, joining us by telephone. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Joe, thank you so much for having me. What a great start to the season. Can't wait to talk about it.
Great. To bid proper farewell to the series itself, we're going to do a poll each week to find out what some of fans' favorite moments were. The poll for this week is, what was your favorite comeuppance moment? And the choices are, and I want you to tell me what your vote would be. The choices are Ramsay Bolton as dog meat, Joffrey's wedding gift, Littlefinger's close shave, Walter Frey eats kitty pie, Cersei's walk of shame, and Tywin gets a laxative. Oh, also, and Jamie lends a hand. What was your favorite comeuppance moment?
Oh, there's so many good ones, but I think I have to go with Littlefinger's close shave, right? Because I think a lot of what happens on the show is because of him. I mean, he called himself an agent of chaos. He loves chaos. Chaos is a ladder, as he said, and then was told he said by Bran in season 7. And I think he's the reason a lot of the bad stuff happens on the show, and then he finally gets his moment in front of the people he said he was trying to protect, and I think he finally got his, and I think he's a major piece off the table in the final season because he was kind of moving a lot of pieces on the board behind the scenes, and we didn't know until after the fact. And yes, he did help initiate the end of Joffrey's reign, but, you know, if it weren't for him, Jon Arryn in season 1 is still alive, and who knows what happens after that.
Yeah, that's my choice, too, because he was such a strategic player that I was beginning to think that this bastard might actually pull this thing off, that he might find himself on the Iron Throne. But so I put this poll out there on both Twitter and Facebook. In fact, I'm a part of a Game of Thrones user group called the Small Council. There are close to 800 people, I think, in that group. And here's how it came out. The choices were, we heard the choices. The winner was Ramsay Bolton as dog meat. I think people really, really hated what Ramsay was doing to everyone. The cruelty to Theon, what he did to Sansa, murdering his own father. And so that was the one that came out. Then the second was Joffrey's wedding gift, and then third was Littlefinger's close shave. The only other choice getting some nods was Walder Frey eats kitty pie, but the others did not. I think with Joffrey's wedding gift, I think everyone sort of expected something bad to happen. You can't have someone that cruel. That's a freebie right there, right? You can't have someone that cruel sort of last this entire. I think everyone, even those that didn't read the book, were expecting something like that. But I thought because of the sheer the mind game that Littlefinger played, that would be a better choice. But that's how it played out. So getting to this week's show. It's back. Didn't disappoint me. I have a question for you, though.
Yeah.
What do dragons eat?
That's a great question. I assumed they were carnivores, but that's a great question that Sansa had for Daenerys when they all sat down together around the table at Winterfell. And I think the show did a great job this week of focusing on legitimate logistical problems, because I don't think that anyone really knows what's coming for them. And I know that Jon has fought the Army of the Dead twice, and Dany lost one of her dragons to them. But I don't think they really know just the size of what's coming for them.
Yeah.
And there are major logistical issues they need to work out before the Army of the Dead shows up on their doorstep.
Yeah, like feeding dragons. And I love Dany's response. They eat whatever they want. Scene sort of set up this what could be a power dynamic between Sansa and Daenerys Targaryen. Let's take a listen to that particular scene.
May I ask, how are we meant to feed the greatest army the world has ever seen?
While I ensured our stores would last through winter, I didn't account for Dothraki, Unsullied, and two full-grown dragons. What do dragons eat, anyway?
Whatever they want.
That was a great comeback.
I love that.
Great snapback. But as you say, really does set up logistical nightmares for this effort. So you have all these armies. You have people like Dothraki who are not used to being in winter conditions. So there's a lot to take in with what's going to happen. One of the things that I thought about pulling all of these folks and pieces together, it really has a sort of Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Rings vibe to it. You have all these would-be
right.
heroes coming together to go after to go on a single mission, which is to save the world. But what did you think of the opening scene? Because this show could easily be called Family Reunion. And one of the things I loved about the opening scene was Arya's standing there watching all the people come in and seeing all the reunions that she's about to have. She sees Jon, who she hasn't seen in years. She sees the Hound. She sees Gendry.
Yeah.
And so that was a pretty – and the range of emotions that were being displayed on her face I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I thought what they did beautifully – they called back to the pilot when King Robert marches into Winterfell, or whether it was the first or second episode, I can't remember specifically when King Robert marches into Winterfell, but she's the one who's bouncing through the crowd as a little child waiting to see who's coming through. And then, you know, they start right away with a young child in Winterfell bouncing through the crowd looking to see who's coming through. And Arya steps out of the way to make sure that he gets a good scene and view of who's coming through. I thought that harkened back beautifully to the first, you know, episode or two of the show. Even Ramin Djawadi's music was almost identical to King Robert coming into Winterfell, but this time it was Dany and Jon Snow coming into Winterfell. And, you know, you're right about Arya. There are a lot of people coming back home for her who she hasn't seen in a really long time, and I thought her reunion with Jon at the Weirwood Tree was really quite emotional.
Yeah,
I've been looking forward to that reunion for a really long time.
Yeah, you know, though that Jon was raised as a bastard in some folks' eyes within the family, a bit of an outsider, I would say that his relationship with Arya was probably the closest relationship that he had in the family. So as a fan, that's the reunion that I've been waiting for the entire show, for the entire
right.
series. And it didn't disappoint. I mean, there was even a little sort of tension with him. I'm not going to say he was trying to pit Sansa against Arya, but there was a little bit of I need you on my side in this sort of internal family squabble kind of thing. But Arya wasn't falling for it. She's not the little girl. I love the line that he says when he says, "You still have your sword. Have you used it?" Has she used it? Man, has she used it? Yeah, it was like,
yeah,
that.
He has no idea what she's been up to.
I loved that scene. Absolutely loved it. the whole reunion theme brought a lot of folks together as everyone's coming into Winterfell. Ser Jorah is back in the fold after having been cured of grayscale by Sam. There's a little reunion there. Obviously, Arya is reunited with everyone, including Jon and Bran and everyone else. There are a lot of this sort of coming back. Even Theon gets not in Winterfell, but gets reunited with Yara after rescuing her from her uncle and getting a headbutt in return as a thank you gift.
Yeah, that was a that's for jumping overboard. Yeah. The first time, but you know, I'll take your hand now, and thanks for taking me back. And then she sends him right back to the north because she knows that his, you know, real allegiance is with, you know, the family that raised him, even though, you know, he's not related to them. But, you know, he's taking orders from the Queen of the Iron Islands, and it was a brief reunion for the two of them, but, you know, he promised he'd rescue her, and he did, and I think that was a big moment for him. But I think the reunion theme really came home in the last 30 seconds of the episode, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That was the 2x4 over the head for us.
Yeah.
At least for me, watching the entire episode.
Yeah, you know, and I wanted to chat about that because I don't know what to expect. Bran is no longer really Bran, you know, and
no.
The way that he's responded to everyone else with indifference, I kind of think he's going to do that with Jaime. But it was a hell of a moment for Jaime, that's for sure. And what we're talking about is when Jaime finally rides in the town. And comes eye to eye with Brandon Stark, who he pushed out of the window within what the first couple of episodes.
It was the first episode. It was the end of the first episode that happened.
As he was getting busy with his sister in Winterfell. That's a heck of a scene. Sets up a tense potential moment for the next episode. But I think that we could be overplaying that one because I think of Bran as the three-eyed raven is pretty indifferent to sort of all the minuscule stuff going on around him, including something like that.
Right. And I don't think Jaime is fully aware that Bran isn't Bran anymore. He probably has no idea what Bran has been up to. I mean, he assumed he was probably going to die when he threw him out of that window because the last time he saw him, he was in a coma in his bed. So I think it's going to be more of a shock to Jaime's system than Bran. I mean, Bran even said to Sam earlier in the episode when Sam saw him sitting outside and winter is here, it's obviously pretty cold for a cripple in a chair, and Sam's like, why are you sitting outside? And Bran tells him, I'm waiting for an old friend.
Yeah,
we have no idea who his old friend is, but you know, Bran sees everything. Nothing is surprising to him anymore, right? So for Jaime, it's going to be more of a shock. And then even the teaser to next week, he comes face to face with the daughter of the king that he slayed. So that's going to be another huge shock to his system as he's fleeing from his own murderous mad queen who's plotting his demise back in King's Landing.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say with all the good intentions that Jaime has, this is not going to be an arms-open kind of place.
No.
Not going to be a welcoming environment for him. So I think Jon and Tyrion are going to be in sales mode next week.
Yes, and they were in this episode, too. You know, they're trying to sell the North on what's in front of them.
Yeah.
It's going to be a hard sell for a lot of these houses.
I drink, and I know things.
Other big moments, I think, big sort of heart-tugging moment, though it surprised me a little bit, was Sam finding out that his father and brother were dragon fodder. That one, I thought because of, not that I thought he would rejoice in his father's death, but because of the way he was treated, sent off to the wall, that he wouldn't be so heartbroken about it, but he was. It was a pretty rough moment. If you go from a high of meeting the queen and her appreciating what you've done for Ser Jorah, potentially becoming the head of the whatever that thing is, the being the head master,
yes,
whatever, to then in the same scene, same moment, finding out that that she killed your brother and your father.
I think he would, and the way that he plays both pieces of news, they're very different because he did not have a good relationship with his father. There was one scene with the two of them, I think it was in the previous season or it was season six, when he's on his way to the Citadel, he's sitting down with his father, who's like not impressed with him at all, and that kind of unspools their relationship a little bit. I think if it was just his father, he may have been able to swallow it a little bit better,
yeah.
But he had a good relationship with his brother, and his brother made the decision to stand with his father and, you know, get cooked in front of everyone. And I think getting that 1-2 punch for Sam was really, really tough to take. And I thought, you know, seeing everyone's reaction there was pretty powerful, you know, because Sam had no idea, and it's been a pretty long while since that happened.
Yeah.
Dracarys.
The other big moment, probably the biggest moment that everyone has been waiting for, is Jon finding out who he is. Let's take a listen to that scene.
Your mother was Lyanna Stark. And your father, your real father, was Rhaegar Targaryen. You've never been a bastard. You are Aegon Targaryen, true heir to the Iron Throne.
That was a powerful scene. I gotta say, I was not expecting Jon's reaction. I think if I were in that situation, I would just be mind blown. Like, what? Tell me more. But he was pretty upset that the most honorable man in the world that he knew, his father, had been lying to him all those years.
Yeah, and he's standing right in front of his father's crypt when this happens. So I think it kind of drives the point home even more. But I think that's more of a defense mechanism for him, right, Joe? Like,
yeah.
He just found out that he's sleeping with his aunt.
Yeah.
Found out that all of his siblings are now his cousins. He found out that he is the rightful heir to the Iron Throne and ruler of the Seven Kingdoms. That's a lot to take in, and I think his first reaction is to blame the father that raised him.
Yeah.
And that's certainly, you know, understandable. That's a lot to process. But, you know, this is going to be an important plot line that they're going to need to unspool going forward, because Dany's going to need to find out as well. And even from a political standpoint, her claim to the Iron Throne just lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, so let's get into a little bit of prediction mode here. So with that particular plot line, we know that if you've ever been in a position on an interim basis for a while, you take ownership of that position. We know that Dany has been proclaiming that she is the rightful heir to the throne for most of her adult life. And now she's going to be faced with the real possibility that that is not true. Well, not the possibility, it's the truth. In this mythology, it's the male lineage that will determine who takes the throne. And so Jon, based on that mythology, is the rightful heir. Is she going to step back and say, okay, you know, we still have this common enemy we have to defeat? Or does this now become a battle and distraction underneath the larger picture that of what they're trying to accomplish? What do you think is going to happen?
I think it's the latter. I'm leaning towards the latter. I think this is going to drive a huge wedge between the two of them. Jon did not conquer the Unsullied. He didn't conquer Meereen, Yunkai, Karth. He did not bring dragons to the table. He does have the North, but I think Dany's done, you know, most of the legwork here, and I think she's going to say, like, I've got all this stuff. What do you have?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be a major problem moving forward for them, just from a political standpoint. Personally, it's obviously going to be a major issue because, you know, the rightful heir to the Seven Kingdoms has been committing incest for a bit.
Right.
So
and does
that's going to be a major problem personally and politically for him.
And is the potential solution the proposal that Tyrion and Varys are trying to set up? I think they want to propose that the two of them get married and rule together. This was before, this is obviously before anyone knows anything about Jon. Is, you know, do we circle back to that at some point and that becomes the solution to this problem? Is that the ending that everybody wants, that John and Daenerys are ruling the world in peace and happiness, blah, blah, blah?
I think that makes it end a little too neatly. Right? Yeah. Nothing in the show ends that neatly, other than Ramsay being eaten by his own dogs. Nothing ends neatly.
Yeah.
I don't think it can be that easy.
So before we get out of here, I want to jump back to the previous season. There are a couple of things that escaped me that I sort of noticed in third viewing now. I don't know if I was running to the bathroom or checking things on my phone. There was a scene with the Red Priestess and Varys when they were at Dragonstone. She says to Varys, after he says, "I'm surprised that you came back here, I have to die in this strange country just like you." Is that a foretelling of is she seeing something in the future? Does she know? So we know, we must know that Varys is going to die. He's going to be one of the people that's going to die at some point, right?
Yeah, for sure. I'm very curious to see what happens with her, because Jon told her if he ever sees her north again, he's going to have her hanged and or burned or whatever. And then Davos looks at her before she leaves, and he tells her that he's going to kill her himself because he's still, you know, smoldering from what happened to Shireen. So, yeah, I think she's going to play a role at some point, and she's probably going to bring something to the table, because she's going to try and fend off her own demise. So this is definitely not the last we've seen of her. She will definitely be coming back at some point this season.
And then in the same season, there's a scene when the at the power gathering, when they brought the dead for Cersei to look at and behold, there was a scene between when the because that was a bit of a reunion scene too. And the Hound walks up to the Mountain and says, "You know who's coming for you. You've always known." That one, it's over my head. I don't know what's going on there. Do you have an idea?
I just think that we are entitled to Clegane Bowl. I need Clegane Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You need Clegane Bowl. We all need Clegane Bowl, Joe. We need the Hound and the Mountain to go at it one more time. And it doesn't look good for the Hound, because the Mountain is stronger than ever, even though he's mute at this point. But
yeah,
I think those two are going to collide one way or the other. And I'm very much looking forward to that happening.
Yeah, me too. Hey, man, it's been great having you on this episode. Did this hit the mark for you? Was this the start of the season that you were hoping for, or did it fall flat?
It is. I thought it was a great table setter. I was not expecting anything major to happen this week. It did. The way this show has gone for the last 8 years has just not followed conventional TV, you know, some stuff happens in season openers, and I knew that it wouldn't be the case. There's just too much to come for them to tackle anything major in this first episode. One thing we didn't hit on that I wanted to quickly mention is they rehauled the opening title sequence.
Yeah, they did.
Season.
They did.
And I loved that. We don't have all these new locations we need to worry about. It's just the Wall, the North, and the South.
Yeah,
the redesign was awesome.
In the Winterfell part of it, they go down into the crypt.
They do, and then they go down into the Red Keep.
Yeah.
When they move out to King's Landing, and they end with the throne room, which I thought was a really nice touch. But there was a lot in that title sequence that kind of foretold what was going to happen in that episode. They show those white tiles from the Wall flipping to a shade of blue to represent the march of the White Walkers to the Last Hearth, which is where we see what happens to young Lord Umber. He meets a grisly demise as well. He's hung on the Wall, and you have the spiral of the limbs. And there was a clue in that title sequence that was going to happen. And I think that's going to be the case over the next 5 Sundays, is there are going to be little hints in the title sequence to let us know what's about to happen, which I think is a really nice touch from the showrunners.
Yeah, remind me never to commit a crime in front of you. Your attention to detail is too damn good. Hey,
that's what happens when you watch True Detective as well, Joe.
Hey, look, the Umber kid nailed to the Wall, that scared the crap out of me. I wasn't expecting... not the fact that the kid was nailed to the Wall, but his scream, I wasn't expecting.
God.
I actually jumped in my seat. Did that happen for you?
It did, and not so much the scream when he opens his blue eyes and no one notices. I jumped out of my seat when that happened. That's there's going to be a lot of those moments in the weeks ahead, and I'm very excited to see, you know, just the interaction between the living and the dead, because that's what this show hangs on moving forward, and they only have 5 more weeks to tie it all up.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching a lot more. I'm looking forward to now that John sort of knows his truth and realizing why these dragons are snuggling up to him and why it's easy for him to jump on the back of one.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed his first dragon ride. But that's all going to, I can't wait to see how this, affects him, emotionally. Thank you for joining us, my friend.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for thinking of me for the premiere. Looking forward to, talking more about it with you in the weeks ahead. And, if we get to do this again before the season's over, looking forward to doing it again with you.
Absolutely. And we invite all of you to join us for another episode of Superfan Weeks here on Pop Life as we break down each episode of A Game of Thrones. Be sure to subscribe to Pop Life on iTunes and Stitcher and like us on Facebook. And you can poke around on WAER.org for past episodes of the show. I want to thank my show producer, Kevin Kloss, for putting together a great episode. And you'll hear from us next week. I'm Joe Lee.